Time for our monthly visit from Cincinnati Observatory outreach astronomer Dean Regas on Cincinnati Edition. He's looking up this morning with Derek Pitts, chief astronomer for the Franklin Institute and the Joel N. Blum Observatory in Philadelphia.
Well, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Dean.
Well, you are chief astronomer for the Franklin Institute. And, Ben Franklin is the kind of your model. You walk into the place and there's Ben sitting there. How does he rank up as one of the great American scientists?
Well, in some ways, that's a really good question. And in other ways, it's a really easy question to answer. You know, the simple answer here is to say that he really stands out as one of the premier American scientists. And I mean that both in the sense of the quality of his work and also being a very early scientist in the early United States. So that's the easy way to answer it. The other way to look at that question, Dean, is to talk about the use of that term scientist. You know, was Benjamin Franklin really a scientist? And if you look at how science has come to be formed and shaped, you know, beginning hundreds of years ago by Galileo and other scientists of his era and coming forward into the, you know, the strong peer-reviewed research process we have today, one might say that Ben Franklin was an incredible natural philosopher, one who was interested in the broad panoply of natural phenomenon and science, nature as he saw it at the time, and had excellent deductive powers to try to interpret what some of those phenomena were. And you could certainly look at his work with electricity as the finest example of that. And, you know, there's no question about it. Franklin did very, very well in understanding what lightning was and its connection to static electricity. But, you know, if you look at all of his other quote-unquote scientific pursuits, he spent 5 years with electricity, really, and that was probably the greatest amount of time he spent in any scientific pursuit. But he did it better than anybody else at the time, and it stands today as a real hallmark of what someone with a deep interest and curiosity can do.
Yeah, he seems to have kind of the same mindset that Galileo, you know, had in the 1600s. And you know, you were privileged enough to have one of the Galileo telescopes, the original, out there for an exhibit. I mean, how in the world did you get that from Florence? What did you have to do to the Pope? I mean.
Well, it actually turned out to be a fortuitous set of circumstances. It was that the museum where many of Galileo's artifacts are kept in Florence was going to be closed during the summer of 2009, summer and into the fall of 2009, for renovation and preparation for 2010 as the 400th anniversary of Galileo's first observation of Jupiter and a number of other celestial objects in a telescope. So the gallery that held these materials was closed. So the museum put together an exhibition for Florence alone that looked at a number of scientific instruments of the Renaissance period, including Galileo's telescope. And so we learned about this and then asked if it was possible to turn this into a traveling exhibit. And the director of the museum was amenable to this plan, and that made it possible for us to bring the exhibition along with the telescope here to the United States. The first time it had ever left Florence, the first time it had ever left Italy, the only city in the United States where this was going to be available for people to see. It was a tremendous exhibit, and I still sort of, you know, groove on the high of being so close to one of the original instruments of Galileo.
And you were able to hold this. I mean, you were able to actually, you know, touch it with the white gloves, and were you able to look through the telescope?
Yes, yes, indeed. You know, let me put it this way, Dean. I was offered the opportunity to hold the telescope, but I declined.
What? And you declined?
I did. Yes, I did. And I declined out of respect for the importance of this instrument, the significance of this instrument. What I did not want to do was to hold this incredible artifact just for the sake of me saying I held it. You know what I mean? It's out of respect and deference for what it really means. And I don't want to, you know, cheapen the significance in any way by being a part of a group of, you know, how many other people would say they held Galileo's telescope? Well, I have so much respect for it that I decline it. Did I look through it? Absolutely. You bet I looked through it. I looked through it several times, but I declined to hold it. I felt that much respect for it.
Wow. I'm speaking with Dr. Derek Pitts, who is the astronomer, chief astronomer for the Franklin Institute in Philadelphia. Now, you're located pretty much right in the heart of downtown. And you know, what are the pluses and minuses of having an observatory, a working observatory downtown?
Let's start with the minuses. You know, I think we can see the full moon on a good night.
A lot of light pollution, huh?
That's a joke, Dean. Yes. Yeah, we do have a lot of light pollution. And people in urban areas who are familiar with the situation, well, you know that we can see quite a number of bright stars. We can see all the visible planets without any difficulty. With a telescope, we can see Uranus and Neptune as well. And, of course, the moon is a target. We can see a few clusters and things of that sort. But we're limited. We cannot see very many deep sky objects. The Orion Nebula is one that's easily visible to us. But the galaxy in Andromeda is very difficult. So one would say that this places severe limitations on what we can do. That's true. However, on the other side, this gives us a wonderful opportunity to provide an introductory experience to the night sky for people who have never done anything with the sky. You know, by having so much city light, we eradicate the background stars, you know, much dimmer stars, and we're left with just the brightest ones that outline the main constellations. So in a sense, it makes it easier for people to identify the main constellations. And then on top of that, in my experience, somewhere between 75 and 80% of people who come to our observatory have never seen the planets through a telescope. So we now can provide this essential, primary experience of observing the night sky. And honestly, Dean, for those people that have never seen Jupiter before, when they see it through our telescope for the first time, their observation of Jupiter is almost as significant in the sense of discovery for them as it was for Galileo. They've never seen it before in a telescope. The idea is abstract to them until they do. And when they see it, then it becomes real to them. And so they've made this personal discovery that for many is a very important event in their lives.
Yeah, that wow moment. I mean, that's why I'm in this business, too. And we recently had an article in our newspaper kind of lamenting the death of field trips and how schools are kind of getting away from field trips. How have you found some creative ways to get students, especially those from the inner cities, to visit the Franklin Institute?
One of the things that we do is we have two events I think really help that. One is a program we do on the third Wednesday of every month called Community Night. Community Night opens the museum to the public for free from 5 until 8 p.m. If you get there right at 5 o'clock, you get to go see an IMAX theater presentation for free. The planetarium and the observatory are open, along with all of our primary exhibits, open for free on the third Wednesday night of every month. On the second Thursday night of every month, we have an observatory program called Night Skies at the Observatory. For $5, you get to see any one of three planetarium shows, or all three if you like. There's always a short lecture presentation on some topic in astronomy and space science or space science. And the observatory is open all that evening until 9 or 10 o'clock, depending upon which time frame we're in. And so this gives people opportunity to experience the museum, even though field trips are, you know, there are not as many field trips, or in the case that the museum admittance fee is too steep, this still provides this important opportunity for people to come and participate in science in this manner.
Oh, well, thank you so much for talking with us today, Derek.
Sure, it's been my pleasure, Dean. I'm glad to have been able to help out here.
I hope folks that are listening can go over and visit the Franklin Institute in Philadelphia. I've been speaking with Dr. Derek Pitts, the chief astronomer for the Franklin Institute. find out more about Derek and the Franklin Institute, go to our website, wvxu.org. For Cincinnati Edition, I'm Dean Regas.